It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 118 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. And Tim, somehow we skipped right over our Spartan episode 117 without even noticing it.
I honestly don't know what that means, but today we're going to be talking about the Imperial conversion kits for X-Wing 2nd Edition.
I guess you're only a Star Wars nerd. That's fine. There's a lot to talk about with the Empire.
Last week, we took a look at the Rebel Alliance conversion kit for X-Wing 2nd Edition. A lot of changes we saw over there. There are also a lot of changes in this Imperial conversion kit, but a lot of them are actually quite different than the changes we saw in the Rebel conversion kit.
Right. With the Imperials, we're going to see much more of an action-focused change as opposed to stat line changes.
So for today's episode, we're going to focus in on the major changes we're seeing to Imperial ship chassis and abilities, and talk about how the 2nd Edition Imperial Faction is going to look different than the 1st Edition Imperial Faction.
Yeah, so let's get right to it.
So we're talking about the Imperial Conversion Kit here. There are going to be three conversion kits launched initially when X-Wing 2nd Edition comes out in September. And these conversion kits are going to help players transfer their old 1st Edition collections into the updated mechanics and rebalancing of the 2nd Edition of the game. So this Imperial Conversion Kit's not going to come with any ships, but it is going to come with all the cardboard punch, the pilot and upgrade cards that you're going to need to take your 1st Edition models and bases into the 2nd Edition of the game.
Right, so today we're going to go over all the Imperial ships included and talk about how they're changing from the original edition into the 2nd Edition of X-Wing.
And what better way to start than by talking about the most iconic Imperial ship, the classic TIE LN fighter.
Yeah, it's the generic TIE fighter you see in all the movies, or just the movies worth watching. And this ship is unchanged from its original edition. The pilot abilities, there's some tweaking with, but the basic chassis, it's got the same stat line, 2 attack dice, 3 agility, 3 hull, no shields, same action bar of focus, evade, barrel roll.
And its dial has been left completely unchanged here. So you got the same kind of basic set of maneuvers, a pretty decently wide selection, not a whole lot of blue maneuvers on there, but really no modifications have been made from 1st edition going into 2nd edition.
And honestly, this is pretty interesting because in the 1st edition for quite a while, the TIE LN fighter was the strongest ship in the game. It completely dominated the early few waves and even then persisted to be a meta force for quite a few waves after that.
Well, and I think at its core, it was just a really efficient platform for its point cost. It was the cheapest ship when X-Wing 1st Edition came out initially, and we never saw any ships drop in with a point cost lower than the 12-point TIE fighter. And just stat line-wise, it's nothing too impressive, but relative to its point cost, it was just the most efficient platform you could get.
Yeah, and the more these ships you take, the better they get, just because those basic 2-dice attacks get a lot better after the 4th, 5th, or 6th, or 7th one you take in a turn. Because at that point, the defender's probably out of defensive tokens.
And there's actually not a whole lot to say specifically about the TIE fighter in this context, since it's mostly unchanged from its 1st edition. I think it's really interesting that this ship has remained unchanged, whereas kind of its counterpart in the Rebel faction, we saw in the original 1st edition core set, and we're seeing in the 2nd edition core set, it's going to come with a T-65 X-Wing and 2 TIE fighters, that the TIE fighter has remained unchanged. But as we talked about in last week's episode, the X-Wing has seen significant changes to its action bar and dial to update it for that 2nd edition. So I think the developers for the game, when they were going into 2nd edition, saw that really there was nothing wrong with the TIE fighter as it was design-wise, so they're going to keep that pretty much unchanged. They're just making adjustments to the other areas of the game that really needed help.
Right, and when we compare one of those T-65s, I mean, that's a very powerful-looking ship, and I think that speaks to the subtle power of the TIE fighter. Yeah, you're probably going to be able to take more of these than T-65s in a list. So one-to-one, the T-65 is going to be stronger. But 4 points, comparatively, I'm hoping that TIE fighter is able to hold its own and be an equal match to the T-65 list. And that is, I guess, one difference that we don't know yet. We don't know what the points of these ships are.
Yeah, and that's a big thing to note for this whole episode here. We're going to be mostly talking design points and changes here. Honestly, we don't really know what the point costs are going to be, since those are all going to be provided in the X-Wing app that's going to come out hopefully sometime between Gen Con and the official release in September. So today we're going to focus really on the design changes we see here. We do know that if point costs in the initial release are not quite balanced, Fantasy Flight has the ability to change those point costs over time, since they're not actually printed on the card. They're only available through the app and the website. So as we're talking today, just keep that in mind, everything we talk about with a little grain of salt there, where we don't know what the point costs are going to be, and that's a huge factor in determining whether these ships are balanced or good choices for your lists. But the TIE Fighter is obviously not the only Imperial ship, so let's talk about some of the ships that have seen some pretty big changes in X-Wing 2nd Edition.
Yeah, and one of the ships I'm most eager to put on the table is the TIE Advanced.
Yeah, the TIE Advanced is an iconic Star Wars ship appearing in A New Hope way back in the day, flown by none other than Darth Vader. We're seeing the stat line stay the same here. 2 attack dice, asterisk, 3 agility dice, 3 hull, and 2 shields. But we're seeing some significant changes in its dial and its action bar.
Right, so it's going to have the focus, target lock, and barrel roll actions, as well as the ability to take a red barrel roll after you take a focus action.
Yeah, so with that focus linked into a red barrel roll, we're seeing those linked actions, which is a huge part of second edition here. In the first edition of the game, we had that classic push the limit elite pilot talent card, allowed ships to perform an extra action at the cost of a stress token after they performed an action. Now that upgrade card is gone, and we're seeing that mechanic more or less built into a lot of ship platforms there. So when you take that white focus action, you're going to be able to take a red barrel roll action. You'll receive a stress, but you'll get the benefit of being able to perform 2 actions in a turn, as opposed to the normal limitation of 1 if they're not linked.
Right, and its dial's also got some improvements. Here we see it gets a white 1 straight, which is pretty great. That ship really does enjoy moving slow, especially where you can utilize that barrel roll in tight situations. So just having more slower maneuvers is really helpful. It also gains 2-speed bank maneuvers that are now blue, which is going to be really important for clearing the stress you get from that linked red barrel roll, and 3-speed red talon roll maneuvers. We saw talon rolls be added late into the first edition, and so now it's great to have those original release ships have these newer maneuvers added to their dials.
Yeah, this is something we saw a fair bit when we were talking about the Rebel conversion kits here. This is an opportunity where now that they're updating all these classic ships that came out in the first couple waves of first edition, they can add all those new mechanics and maneuvers that were introduced later on in first edition's lifespan to these older ships, so that gives them a lot more versatility. And it's actually really important to have multiple options for these turnaround maneuvers, especially on these possibly more expensive ships like the TIE Advanced. Whereas before, when it's just limited to like a single K-turn, that makes it really hard to reposition. It also makes it really predictable when it starts to fly out of the fight. Now, if you have these red talon rolls in addition to that 4K-turn, you've got 3 distinct areas that you could end up turning around in. It makes it a lot harder for your opponent to anticipate and block those turnaround maneuvers. Another big change that's coming, second edition, we're seeing ship abilities now. These are abilities built into ship platforms, regardless of the pilot flying the ship. And a lot of them are similar abilities to things we saw in the first edition of the game. The TIE Advanced is no exception. You now have the built-in ship ability of the Advanced Targeting Computer, which, while you perform a primary attack against a defender you have locked, meaning you have a target lock on them, roll 1 additional attack die and change 1 hit result into a crit result.
Right. So here you get to turn your 2-dice attack into a 3-dice attack, but there's a little hoop you have to jump through first. You just have to get a target lock. And if we go back to the TIE Advanced actions, that is going to be a bit more of a cost because, I mean, this ship does have 3 agility, so you really do want defensive mods, and that white target lock action doesn't give you any linked path to also get a focus action. So when you try to set up your advanced targeting computer, you are going to be without defense that turn. So you have to really be strategic about when you take that target lock action.
Well, and having that advanced targeting computer built into the TIE Advanced is a huge boon for the TIE Advanced. We saw in the first edition of the game, this ship was generally underpowered, even from its initial release there, not being able to do a lot of damage or have a lot of ways to modify its dice. Here we're seeing this huge benefit. Later on in the lifespan of first edition, we saw the release of 2 important TIE Advanced cards, the TIE X1 title, which granted the ship a system slot, and it made all systems you equip quite a bit cheaper. We also saw the release of the Advanced Targeting Computer system upgrade, which was for the TIE Advanced only, which allowed you to add a critical result to your attack rolls, but you couldn't spend the lock here. in the advanced targeting computer ship ability. We're seeing a similar effect, though it's a little less limiting. You're allowed to spend that target lock even though you're rolling the extra attack die at the cost of you're not adding a result, you're just adding the potential for an additional result.
Right. The trade-off here is this ship we know does have a system slot, which means you can take other systems.
And to that end, Fantasy Flight did spoil a couple of the system upgrade cards in their unboxing video. We know that we have advanced sensors, which allows you to perform an action before you move. And we also have fire control system, which actually works a little bit differently than it did in first edition. Fire control system in second edition, when you already have a target lock on a defender, you can reroll one attack die, but you're not allowed to spend that target lock.
Right, and so that's going to work really well with that advanced targeting computer. You're going to get that initial target lock, and then just focus that ship until you destroy it, rerolling attack die each turn, and then you can spend your actions on focusing and barrel rolling. And if you're Darth Vader, you can just do all of the actions.
Yeah, so there's some cool stuff coming in the TIE Advanced here. I think pretty much all the changes across the board here are positive. Obviously, the huge unknown is the point cost, especially how this ship lines up against its rough Rebel equivalent, the T-65 X-Wing. So that's something we're going to have to see down the road here when Fantasy Flight gives us a little more information about point costs or the potential release of the app.
We also got a TIE Interceptor in here. Looks the same as its original version, just 3 attack dice, 3 agility, 3 hull. Its dial is a bit different. Its flip-around maneuvers are going to be a little different. It's going to lose the 3 and 5 speed K-turns, but it's going to gain a 4 speed K-turn and 2 3 speed Signor's loops.
Yeah, this is actually a pretty big positive for the ship. Again, it allows it to have, instead of just 2 distinct turnaround areas, it's going to have 3 turnaround areas, that either the 4K or the S-loop to the right or left. And also having S-loops over K-turns allows you to change your firing arc a little bit, which is another advantage you have here. Being limited to those K-turns before meant your firing arc was just going to be oriented the opposite way here. Here you have a little bit more flexibility with where that firing arc ends when you're turning around. We're also seeing an action bar that is the same as it was in first edition, with the caveat of a new ship ability, which makes that action bar inherently pretty good. So the basic actions the TIE Interceptor has is the focus action, the evade action, the barrel roll action, and the boost action. But it does have access to the auto thruster's ship ability.
Right, and auto thrusters grants you the ability that after you perform an action, you may perform a red barrel roll or red boost action.
So effectively, you can link any action on your action bar into a red repositioning action.
Right, and so this means that the TIE Interceptor can boost and barrel roll in the same turn, which is a very powerful combination of maneuvers that can allow you to easily dodge a lot of your opponent's firing arcs. It also allows you to choose either boost or barrel repositioning action and still get a modification, either a focus or evade token. It also means you can't get both a focus and an evade token, which is what TIE Interceptors really liked doing in the original edition.
Yeah, I think the big effect of the changes we're seeing on the TIE Interceptor here is it's really truly going to be more a ship focused on arc dodging rather than defensive token stacking. Pretty much all the TIE Interceptors you see, mostly Karnor Jax and Soontra Fel in first edition, relied heavily on the push the limit upgrade card so that they had access to getting multiple defensive tokens in a round. Soontra Fel's ability in the first edition allowed him to get an extra focus token whenever he got stressed, so he was often ending up with 2 focus tokens and an evade token on the turns he needed to engage. That's a lot of defensive modification. Without the aid of any other ship abilities, you're inherently only going to be able to get either a focus token or an evade token on the second edition interceptors, which means you're going to be depending a lot more on using those auto thrusters to arc dodge and outposition your opponent.
Yeah, and with only 3 hit points, you need to really make sure you're dodging your opponent each and every turn. Or perhaps these ships will be cheap enough that if a few of them explode, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, again, this is a case where those point costs are going to be really important. It looks like the TIE Interceptors in 2nd Edition are quite a bit more vulnerable than the TIE Interceptors in 1st Edition, but that could be compensated pretty easily if they're a few points cheaper so you can fit more in a list or fit some other bigger ships in there.
And finishing off our classic Imperial fighters, we have the TIE Bomber, which also has the same stat line. 2 attack dice, 2 agility, and 6 hull.
And we saw a couple mild changes to its dial here. Its 2-speed hard turns are now white instead of red, so it gives it a little more flexibility in its turning maneuvers. It also has an added 3 K-turn in addition to its other 5-speed K-turn, which gives it more options for repositioning there. The action bar has seen a little bit of a change. We still have a focus action and a target lock action. We can also see a barrel roll action linked into a red target lock, as well as a red reload action.
Right. So for most ships, you're going to see linked actions with focus actions. Here, we have the link with the target lock, which means the bomber is going to be much more focused on delivering munitions that require those target lock actions. And we see that further reinforced with that red reload action, so you can keep firing those munitions turn after turn.
Yeah, we also saw that red reload action on the Y-Wing over on the Rebel side, and having access to that red reload action is going to be a pretty significant feature for ships that are going to be general ordnance carriers. We know the TIE Bomber has access to munition slots as well as bomb slots, and being able to take that red reload action, even though it gives you a stress and a disarm token, being able to recover one of the charges on either a device or an ordnance piece is going to be a huge long-term advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this looks like what we wanted our TIE Bombers to be. Your traditional munition carrier for the Empire. You know, it's going to deliver those torpedoes or missiles very well. And then hopefully it also gets to do some bombing. We do see that it has the nimble bomber ship ability.
Yeah, this is actually a pretty cool thing they threw on here. One of the most ironic things about the TIE Bomber in first edition X-Wing is that you very seldom ever saw them carry bombs at all. Here, we've now got a built-in ship ability that makes having them carry bombs a little bit more versatile. The Nimble Bomber ability reads, if you would drop a device using a straight template, you may use a bank left or bank right template of the same speed instead. So I think this ship ability is interesting for two reasons. First of all, you've got the inherent flexibility of being able to use those bank templates instead. Gives you some more interesting final destinations for your bomb tokens. I also like the language of it, where it actually doesn't specify when you're using, say, a one-speed straight template, which appears to still be the standard for dropping devices or bombs. It actually just specifies when you're using a straight template. So if we get some abilities later on in the game that enabled you to drop with a different speed template, maybe like Bombardier did in first edition, where you could use a two straight template instead of a one, you could actually still use that speed of a template with a bank left or right. So get even more flexibility with your bomb drops.
Right. That's pretty cool that this ability will scale with any other bombing upgrades you might get. Pretty cool foresight in language there. All right. Moving on to one of my favorite Imperial ships, we have the TIE Advanced V1, better known as the TIE Advanced Prototype Ship. And once again, it's going to have that same stat line it has in the original version. 2 attack dice, 3 agility, 2 hull, and 2 shields.
We did also see some changes to its dial. A little bit of a loss here on the force rate, which was once green and is now white. But it did gain 2 talon rolls. So to the left or right, it can take a talon roll now as a turnaround option, in addition to its standard 4K turn.
It's got the focus, evade, and target lock actions, as well as white barrel roll or white boost actions that can link into a red focus action. So for those actions, you got to make sure that barrel roll or boost lands so that you can still get the red focus action.
I will say I was a little disappointed that you didn't have the option to have a target lock action link into an evade action, kind of like we saw on the TIE V1 title back in first edition. But this is still a pretty diverse action bar here. Being able to reposition and link that into a focus action is a pretty valuable ability. And if this is on the cheaper end of platforms, I can see how this would be a very valuable ship, both as a close-up fighter and as a really effective blocker.
Right. I mean, so the TIE Advanced Prototype was the original ship with a linked action with that target lock into evade action. But I think when we look at the pilots here, it might make sense why that difference has been made. Because this ship has a lot of force users.
Yeah, and looking at the pilots we've seen so far for the TIE Advanced V1, you can see some of the interesting design areas that the developers can go into for X-Wing 2nd Edition. We do have 2 generic pilots that have been spoiled. Both come in at Initiative 3, which is the new phrase for pilot skill. One's called Inquisitor, and the other's called Baron of the Empire.
Right, and I think this generic Inquisitor is my favorite designed pilot from this 2nd Edition so far. I just love the simplicity of there's no pilot ability, but it does have a force charge.
Yeah, in 2nd Edition, Force-sensitive pilots have a force rating built in varying from 1 to 3, and at the start of each round, they're going to get one of those force charges back. And force charges can be spent kind of like mini focus tokens here. Each force charge you spend during an offense or defense roll, you can change one focus result into a hit or to a crit, depending on what you're rolling for. But they also have abilities that go beyond that if you're assigning force power upgrade cards to your force-sensitive pilots.
Right, so here it will in theory have different upgrade slot options than that Baron of the Empire, but it also gets that force charge each turn. So when we're looking at those actions, it can take the evade action, and then it still has like a mini built-in focus where you can spend that force charge to convert one focused result into a hit or an evade. And so there it's like having double mods. You know, you can either take the target lock and have that force charge backing up your attack, or take the evade and use the force charge on defense, making this very resilient when it needs to be. Or you can make that choice and use your repositioning actions, and you can still get that red focus, but now you're going to get some diminished returns with your mods, because that force ability is not going to synergize as well when you already have the focus token.
And I think it's also interesting to compare the Inquisitor here to the Baron of the Empire. Both generics, Tide Vance V1, both come in at initiative 3. But as we said, the generic Inquisitor has a force rating of 1 and has access to the force power upgrade slot, whereas the Baron of the Empire, which the developers have said is going to be quite a bit cheaper than the generic Inquisitor, is not going to have access to that force rating, won't have access to the force power slot, obviously. It will have access to the talent slot, and they said it will be actually significantly cheaper than the other ship since it doesn't have some of those bigger perks.
Yeah, so I think both those options sound pretty exciting.
And we have one more in-canon Imperial ship to talk about, the classic Lambda-class shuttle.
Now, here we do see a hit point adjustment. It's going to move from 5 hull and 5 shields now to 6 hull and 4 shields.
Yeah, and that's a little bit interesting. We saw a lot of hit point adjustments like that, losing shields, trading them out for hull over in the Rebel faction. This is the only case we've seen in the Imperial faction where we see a change like that to make this ship a little more susceptible to that crit deck.
Its dial is still going to stay the same. Got a lot of bad maneuvers, not too many options. Those two turns are still going to be red. It does still have the zero stop, but its actions, quite an overhaul.
Yeah, even though the dial is still probably the worst in the game of X-Wing, we saw some pretty significant boosts here in its action bar. It has access to the focus action. No longer does it have access to a target lock, but it has access to a white reinforce, a white coordinate, and a red jam action.
Yeah, coordinate, obviously very powerful. And that reinforce, you know, particularly when you put high-end crew options on there, is going to be pretty important to protect the Lambda shuttle. That is a huge boost. And that red jam action, I think, is pretty interesting because we know Lambda doesn't have many great ways to clear the stress, and it does want access to use those red maneuvers to be able to keep arc. So that's a pretty interesting cost to have that red jam action in there.
Towards the end of first edition's lifespan, really the only time we'd see Lambda class shuttles was when they were carrying the really powerful Emperor Palpatine upgrade card. While there's actually going to be a pretty powerful Emperor Palpatine upgrade card in second edition, the way they've upgraded the Lambda class here, particularly in those support and control effects like reinforce, coordinate, and jam, I think mean that the Lambda class doesn't necessarily just have to be a platform for carrying Emperor Palpatine.
Yeah, and I really like how there's a lot of different powerful options on that action bar. They're going to do very different things. So you're going to really have to think and consider what's going to be the most appropriate each turn.
And looking beyond the action bar, another huge change that the Lambda is gaining is actually a rear firing arc with an attack value of 2. It's still got its primary firing arc of 3, but one of the problems you'd often encounter with the Lambda class in first edition is it usually engages a couple times while it's moving, but since its dial is so bad and it has such a hard time turning around, often you'd reach a point there where you've gotten too close into the fight, you're going to have to take a long time turning around, and that just opened you up for a bunch of shots that you just weren't going to be able to respond to with the Lambda class here. That's really not as much of a problem anymore because now you've got that rear attack value of 2, so you can still threaten some damage even while you're trying to turn around.
Yeah, so here at the Lambda, I think looks appealing even without any upgrades or crews on it.
Yeah, honestly, just having that white coordinate action alone is a pretty big boost you could have to a squad there, being able to throw out extra actions, which are pretty hard to come by in second edition.
Yeah, so far overall, just looking at all the iconic ships for the Imperials, quite a bit of exciting options. And of course, there's still more to come.
All right, so we've still got a lot of ships to talk about here. Let's move on to the TIE Striker here, which has seen a couple changes.
Yeah, so the TIE Striker from Rogue One is still going to have the same stat line in the first edition, 3 attack dice, 2 agility, and 4 hull. Its dial is a little different, though. Its 2-speed K-turn has now become a 1-speed K-turn, which is pretty crazy. And its 2 banks are going to be changed to blue.
We also see that the Striker now has a built-in ship ability called Adaptive Ailerons, which is pretty much identical to its version in first edition. Before you reveal your dial, if you are not stressed, you must execute a white 1-bank left, straight, or 1-bank right maneuver.
Its actions are going to stay the same. It's still going to have the focus, evade, and barrel roll actions. But we do know that it has a new upgrade. It's It's got the device slot, which is what we think of as the bomb slot.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see this ship differentiate itself from a ship like the TIE Bomber, which has also got some really good bombing options there. I think the key difference would be that the TIE Striker does not have access to any kind of reload, so if you're going to load it out with these kind of devices, you're only going to get the uses out of them that you normally would, whereas that TIE Bomber with the reload action is going to be able to get those charges back on their device tokens.
Right, so in general, the TIE Striker is going to move and feel the same way it did in the first edition, but perhaps now it can also fill a new role with that device slot.
We've also got the TIE Defender, or TIE D Defender, which has actually seen some pretty substantial changes in second edition.
Yeah, its hit points actually went up, and now has 3 hull and 4 shields, so it got an extra shield.
We've also seen some improvements to the quality of its dial. It now has access to 1-bank blue maneuvers there, so it has some options to clear stress while angling a little bit. Before, in first edition, it was just set on those straight maneuvers to clear stress. It also actually gained access to a red 2K turn, even though it still has its white 4K turn here, just giving it some extra repositioning options.
And then it's got a bunch of actions. It's got the focus action, the evade action, target lock, barrel roll, and boost. No linked actions, though. So that's pretty interesting. It's got a lot of action diversity, but it can't take 2 actions in one turn, which is probably fine because it has the ship ability that lets it take another action.
Yeah, the TIE Defender has the ship ability Full Throttle. After you fully execute a speed 3-5 maneuver, you may perform an evade action. This is actually really interesting because the TIE Defender is actually one of the only ships that can stack focus and evade tokens natively.
Right, so it's going to have really good defensive modification. It's got that 3 agility backed up by focus and evade, and now it has even more hit points, so it can be pretty defensive.
And I know initially when we looked at the ship and a lot of other X-Wing players, we're actually a little bit worried here because this ship has just generally gotten improvements. It still has that same kind of free evade granting ability that we saw from the TIE X7 title in first edition, which made those ships really, really powerful. And having it get that extra hit point there and have access to pretty much all the good core actions makes us a little worried about how this ship is going to work in second edition.
Yeah, the X7 Defenders were one of the most powerful ships in first edition. So the developers should be reasonably aware of just how powerful that TIE Defender is with its extra hit points compared to all the other Imperial fighters. And now it's going to have action superiority.
Yeah, so, I mean, hopefully we'll see this ship costed appropriately for how good it is on the baseline. Developer Alex Davey did say in their unboxing live stream that this ship, because it has such great action options, a really solid stat line and maneuver dial, it is going to be incredibly expensive. So he says that they have costed it appropriately. Hopefully that's true. We still don't know any idea of what the point costs are going to be here for this ship. But, you know, even if they do cost it inappropriately and it's a little too powerful for how good it is, they can still update those point costs thanks to, in second edition, everything's either through the app or the website. So none of those point costs are set in stone. So I'm at least optimistic that if this one is a little too powerful for how expensive it is, they can adjust that over time.
I hope it's just appropriately costed and not too expensive, because this looks like a lot of fun to fly. So many different actions. You're always going to be protected with that evade action, which means you can get aggressive, take those target locks, and just use your really powerful stat line to your advantage. Plus, those white K turns are really fun.
Next up, we have the seldom used TIE Punisher. This has been updated to a medium base now, so it's going to have that medium base size, which falls between a small base and a large base ship. If you're buying the conversion kits, even though it comes on a small base in the first edition of the game, the conversion kit's going to have some medium bases for you to use, so no worries there. And we're seeing a pretty much unchanged stat line. It's still got a primary attack value of 2, agility value of 1, 6 hull points, and 3 shields.
And with the same unchanged stat line, I don't know if the Punisher's going to cut it. The Hawkwing went from 1 attack die to 2.
Yeah, that was...
It doubled.
Okay, we're talking about Imperials right now, Carson, so let's try to stay focused here. We also saw some dial changes to the TIE Punisher. It gained a 0-stop maneuver, which gives it some more versatility there. Its 2 hard turns are now white instead of red, so it's got some more turning options, though its 3 hard turns are now red instead of white, which I guess you could argue is a little bit of a downside there. I think it's a little more valuable to have the 2 white hard turns than the 3. You just got some more diverse options there.
Yeah, gaining the 0-stop, that's a big deal. And I think having those turn colors switched around, I think, is going to help the TIE Punisher a bit. It doesn't really want to go that fast. It wants to stay slow and fire those munitions. So having more of a focus on moving as slow as you can, I think is good. It does have a pretty good action selection. We see focus, target lock, a red barrel roll. It can boost and link that into a red target lock as well as a white reload. So we see again a focus on that target lock, but still has pretty good repositioning options. And a white reload is very powerful. That's probably going to be the reason you take a Punisher.
Yeah, clearly, as it was intended to be in the first edition, the TIE Punisher is supposed to be an even more ordnance-dedicated platform over the TIE Bomber here. Presumably, it's going to be more expensive to compensate for the extra action abilities and for the higher hit point count there. But yeah, having that white reload action is pretty powerful there. Not having to take that stress token, it allows you to be able to take those hard turns or turnaround maneuvers and boost back into the fight.
Yeah, and from what we've seen with munitions, you know, proton torpedoes look very good. You know, if the Punisher can take those, which I would assume it can, you know, perhaps maybe this is just the best proton torpedo platform, and that is good enough.
It will be interesting to see how having this ship as a medium base affects its playability. It didn't see a lot of play in first edition already, so I'm not sure if that's going to have a negative or positive impact there. I think a lot of it's going to come down to how useful is ordnance and devices in this edition of the game, and does this ship have access to all those slots, and how many?
Right, and you know, being the medium base, that means that boost action is going to close a lot more range. So you could really surprise people from being well outside of range 3, doing your maneuver, and then boosting and still being able to get that target lock with your red linked action to fire the munition. And that might be the niche that the Punisher fills really well.
Yeah, hopefully the TIE Punisher can find its role in X-Wing 2nd Edition, even though it couldn't really find its place in the 1st Edition. Another ship that really never established itself is the TIE Aggressor. This ship is unique in that it's the only Imperial ship to have access to a turret upgrade slot, which remains true in the 2nd edition of the game.
Its stats are the same, its dial is the same as the 1st edition, its actions are pretty similar. It's got the focus, target lock, and barrel roll actions, as well as that barrel roll can link into a red evade action.
And the devs were quick to point out in the unboxing video that this is an interesting design space we have here where it has access to an action only by means of linking into that action. So this ship has no native white evade. It can only get an evade token through linking into a red evade action.
Yeah, so it's going to be a super defensive barrel roll, which is fun.
And honestly, it's kind of hard to place where the aggressor is going to fall in. It never really had a place in first edition of X-Wing just because attack values were getting so high there that 5-hit-point aggressor just really couldn't keep up with all those really big, heavily modified attack rolls. It would just get popped a little too quickly.
Conversely, though, the TIE Phantom has some pretty big changes. I mean, particularly when we look at those attack dice. Phantom was the original 4-attack dice ship. Now it's been downgraded to just 3 attack dice. But it did get an extra hit point, so now has 3 hull and 2 shields.
We also saw a slight adjustment to its dial there, which now gives it access to 1 bank maneuvers, which is actually a pretty big advantage you can get when you're using those decloak actions all the time. Being able to just slightly bank instead of being set on those 1 hard turns is pretty beneficial.
Absolutely. There's many times on the Phantom dial that I just wished there was the 1 bank, and now it's got them, so I think that's pretty exciting. Its actions are going to stay the same. It's got the focus, evade, barrel roll, and cloak action. And I think we can't talk about this ship without talking about that ship ability, the Stygium Array.
Yeah, after you decloak, you may perform an evade action. And then at the start of the end phase, you may spend 1 evade token to gain 1 cloak token.
Yeah, so the original advanced cloaking device where you got to cloak after you perform an attack was just way too good and really was only good on the higher pilot skill ships. So now this ability is going to work well for whatever initiative Phantom you take. It's going to work just the same.
Well, and it creates some interesting gameplay decisions you have to make there. Since if you want to gain that cloak token at the end phase, you're going to have to hold on to that evade token. So you might be put in a position where you're being shot at and you have to decide, all right, do I want to spend the evade token now, take less damage, but not be able to cloak again? Or do I suffer the damage so that I can have access to that cloak token to give me some positional advantage for the next round?
Right. I mean, in decloaking and getting that evade token is actually pretty solid. I mean, I've done that a lot with a Hawk with the Stygium Particle Array and a cloaking device added on there. And just getting that evade token when you decloak, come in for your turn of combat, is pretty nice added defense. And then having this extra ability to get that cloak token back if you don't spend that evade token, that's really good.
the developers have said that decloaking functions pretty much the same way it did in first edition here. So it actually happens in the system phase before everyone starts revealing their dials and moving, which is similar to the way it worked in first edition, where it would happen at the beginning of the activation phase before any other ship or ability activates. So you'd have to decloak first, then everyone would start moving. I just think it's really interesting to see this pretty substantial change to the TIE Phantom here. It's becoming a lot less of a glass cannon. It's got a little less offense there, going from 4 attack dice to 3 attack dice. It's a little bit more durable with that extra hit point. I think it'll be interesting to see what kind of role the TIE Phantom has in second edition.
Yeah, I mean, with that sharp attack dice decrease, I would really like to see the TIE Phantom's point cost go down considerably, because I think this looks like a pretty interesting ship. That Stygium Array looks like a lot of fun, and potentially, you know, if you have this ship be your not primary target in your list, and hopefully it still has access to crew slots, so maybe we can get some control or support abilities going on in there, I think this could be a pretty exciting ship to play.
The last small base ship we're going to talk about today is the fan favorite Alpha Class Starwing. This is another ship that released pretty late in the X-Wing First Edition life cycle, but it did have a pretty big impact here. Its ability to use ordnance really effectively made it a pretty strong staple of the Imperial faction in the later days of X-Wing First Edition. And here we see a lot of it staying the same.
Yeah, this is interesting because this ship was kind of a testament to just how far the power creep had gotten in the game. Just a very powerful stat line. That's unchanged. Its dial remains the same. That's very good when you consider it still has the slam action and a white reload action. Still also has the focus and target lock actions. And it's going to have both those arsenal loadout or assault configuration titles. You know, one focuses on munitions, the other focuses on cannons. They're going to work pretty similar and allow you to attack while you still have a disarm token. I'm kind of amazed that this ship, you know, didn't see any hit point reductions or changes to the dial. Maybe it'll just cost more.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it has remained unchanged. You still have that flexibility from a really strong dial combined with the slam action. I think the biggest changes here come in the new configs, which is the second edition equivalent of title cards. In the OS1 Arsenal loadout, it functions similarly to its first edition, where when you have a disarm token, you can still perform those torpedo and missile attacks as long as you have the target locked. Here, it puts a limitation on that, though. You can't spend those locks during the attacks, whereas you could spend them in the first edition title. And then on the XG1 assault configuration, this one is really interesting. It still allows you to perform cannon attacks while you have a disarm token, but here, rather than limiting you to cannons of a certain point cost, it just specifies that when you're attacking with a cannon while disarmed, you roll a maximum of 3 attack dice. So you can't use something like a heavy laser cannon for its full effect, even though you can still use it partially.
Yeah, I mean, it's still just really powerful to have that option.
And honestly, from a personal level, I've gotten pretty used to flying Alpha Class Starwings in first edition, so I'm actually pretty happy to see that they're mostly the same for second edition.
Tim, you shouldn't be excited about your broken stuff from first edition carrying over to second edition.
I'll take any advantage I can get when we're playing pretty much a whole new game. All right, the last ship we're going to talk about today is the other large base ship from the Imperial faction, the VT-49 Decimator, which has seen some mild changes overall, but I think is going to see a pretty substantial change in the way it's played.
Yeah, the numbers on its stat line are unchanged, but it does have a big change in that this was a turreted ship, and now it is going to have what is going to be the new turret, the double firing arc. So it's going to either have forward and rear firing arcs active, or left and right firing arcs active.
We've also seen some changes to its dial. It still doesn't have any turnaround maneuvers, but its one straight and one banks are now blue. It gains red one hard turns, which is really interesting because it's one of the few large base ships we've seen so far with one hard turns. And its three straight maneuvers now white instead of blue.
It's got quite a bit of action. It's got the focus action, target lock, reinforce. We have another big ship getting the reinforce action. Got the rotate action, which it needs because it has that turret, and a red coordinate action.
Yeah, again, seeing that coordinate action coming up here, it looks like it's going to be pretty important to the faction identity of the Imperials. Being able to send out extra actions to your smaller Imperial fighters seems like a pretty core strategy to this faction.
It's got no repositioning action, so just the Rebel large base ships get to either boost or barrel roll, it seems.
Yeah, and I think that's actually where one of the biggest changes we're seeing in this ship's role and playstyle is going to change from first edition to second edition. A lot of the decimators we saw in first edition would be Rear Admiral Chirna with that Veteran Instincts upgrade card to get that pilot skill up to 10, and then you'd have an engine upgrade modification on there. So this big lumbering ship really kind of turned into a pretty aggressive arc-dodging ship, whereas that's not going to be possible in second edition here, since as we know right now, there's no way for this large base ship to gain a boost action.
Yeah, and I mean, flavorfully, though, I'm pretty okay with it having a reinforce action. It'll just sit there in combat and take the brunt of the attack.
Yeah, I think in second edition, the Decimator is going to be a lot more of a, you know, big tank ship rather than kind of a weirdly nimble arc dodger.
And with no actions linked to its rotate action, it will need to be a lot more methodical about, you know, where it places so that it wants to still maintain arc each turn so that it can use its actions for modifying his tax or getting that reinforce action, and maybe even coordinating.
All right, so there you have it, our look at the Imperial Conversion Kit from X-Wing 2nd Edition. I think we see a lot of changes here to help distinguish the Imperial faction from the other ones, and I think we're seeing a lot of the ship's individual roles within this faction kind of be re-solidified in that, you know, a TIE Bomber is intended to be an ordnance carrier, an Interceptor is intended to be an arc dodger, a lot of changes reaffirming their intended roles.
All right, Tim, what Imperial ship are you most excited to try in second edition?
Well, as much as I want to say the Alpha Class Starwing, I'm actually really excited for the TIE Advanced V1, you know, the TIE Advanced prototype. I've gotten a lot of playtime with the Inquisitor in first edition, so I'm actually excited to try out the Grand Inquisitor in second edition there, who's got, you know, a similar ability. It's a little more limited, but now you have the benefit of that Force rating, so I think it's going to be a really fun, interesting ship to try and figure out and fly when the game comes out. What about you? What are you most excited for?
Okay, I was also going to say the TIE V1, so I'll change and say the TIE Phantom. I think that cloak mechanic looks really interesting, and I really like that play of where if you don't have to spend the evade, then you can re-cloak, but you still have some defense on the turn you de-cloak. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think overall it's pretty safe to say we're excited to fly some TIE fighters when this game comes out in September.
Just the good ones, though.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the podcast, please go on to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a written review saying what you like about the podcast. Those are actually really important in us reaching a wider audience there. People really do value those reviews. So we appreciate anyone who's left us a 5-star review.
If you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means a lot to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back with you next week to talk about that Scum and Villainy conversion kit.
It's got more hawks in it, and of course, Asajj.